Studio 360.
And now some thoughts from our conspiracy theorist in chief.
If you look at voter registration, you look at the dead people that are registered to vote, who vote.
His grandmother in Kenya said he was born in Kenya and she was there and witnessed the birth, okay?
What was he doing having breakfast or whatever they were doing 3 months before the JFK assassination? Why are they doing that? Why is the father meeting with Lee Harvey Oswald?
Like Trump, Hollywood loves conspiracy theories. But Hollywood's tend to be less preposterous than President Trump's and presented as fiction. Sam Adams is a senior editor at Slate, and he's as big a fan of conspiracy movies as I am. He's also got a new podcast all about them called Conspiracy Thrillers Movie Club.
The thriller part is probably more important to me than the conspiracy thriller as far as what's in and what's out. The thriller is just a great structure for kind of the gradual accumulation of information and a kind of accompanying threat that swells the closer you get to the truth. And the conspiracy, the uncovering of a great conspiracy, is just kind of goes hand in hand at that.
So what we're going to do today is kind of a sampler of your podcast and play clips from some of the movies that you're doing whole episodes about. First off is The Manchurian Candidate, where Frank Sinatra plays an army captain whose whole platoon is captured during the Korean War and brainwashed by the communists, and they all end up part of a communist plot to take over the U.S. government. Right?
I think that that's a pretty good start. I mean, it's important to remember that as much as this movie is kind of associated with the Kennedy assassination now, that it came out before it. And in fact, Sinatra, who was a friend of Kennedy, had to kind of get Kennedy's blessing for the studio to proceed with it because it does center around a political assassination. And that was a touchy subject.
Yeah. Well, here, the clip we're going to play is Sinatra, who plays Major Bennett Marco, talking to his superior officer.
For the last 6 months, I've been driven nearly out of my mind by the same recurring dream.
The medical officer in charge.
What the hell does a medical corps know about intelligence work, Milt? I tell you, there's something phony going on. There's something phony about me, about Raymond Shaw, about the whole Medal of Honor business. For instance, when the psychiatrist asked me how I felt about Raymond Shaw, how I personally felt about him, and how the whole patrol felt about him, did you hear what I said? Did you really hear what I said? I said Raymond Shaw is the kindest, warmest, bravest, most wonderful human being I've ever known in my life. And even now I feel that way, this minute. And yet, somewhere in the back of my mind, something tells me it's not true. It's just not true.
That was Frank Sinatra in The Manchurian Candidate. So you did your first podcast about it. Do you think of it as the sort of prototype of this genre?
I do think of it as kind of the prototype of the modern conspiracy thriller. I mean, there are certainly dozens, if not hundreds, of movies before that about, you know, Nazi spies and secret agents and things like that. But what really brings it into its own is the psychological element that you see in that clip where Sinatra's character, Bennett Marco, was talking about, you know, I'm going out of my mind. And he knows this thing, but his conscious mind is telling him it's not so, but some part underneath him, something just feels wrong. And he's been, as we find out later, he's been brainwashed by the Chinese.
I think we know that from that clip.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But he can't put his finger on it. So he feels things that he knows not to be true. And he can't reconcile the two. And that element, where basically to know the truth, you have to indulge something that makes you feel crazy and makes other people think that you're crazy, is really what kind of defines the conspiracy thriller.
Yeah. It didn't immediately create a genre of these films, but let's fast forward to when it bloomed, the mid-1970s, this genre was everywhere. This is a clip from another movie with an assassination plot. It's The Parallax View, directed by the great Alan Pakula. Came out in 1974. What's the basic log line of The Parallax View?
Yeah, this is a real cornerstone of the genre. This is about Warren Beatty, plays a reporter who is a witness to a political assassination at the beginning and stumbles onto this international syndicate of corporate assassins.
Well, here is Warren Beatty talking to Paul Prentice in Parallax View.
Since the assassination, six of these people have died in some kind of an accident.
Four. Look, nobody's trying to kill you, huh?
These people were killed. And whoever killed them is going to try to kill me. Austin Tucker thinks so, too. Austin thinks that maybe we all saw something up there.
That is a very common sort of plot thing in these movies of, we all saw something. It was right there, but we didn't notice what was going on, right?
Yeah, I mean, one of the key elements in the paranoid mindset, and this goes back to the paranoid style in American politics, the kind of classic 64 essay that really laid this mindset out, is
Richard Hofstadter, one of my heroes.
Yes. But he emphasizes in that one of the hallmarks of the paranoid style is that the evidence is kind of right in front of us, and it's just a matter of connecting the dots. The parallax view came out in 74, which is right as Watergate was cresting. Alan Pakula then went on to make All the President's Men a couple years later, which is, of course, about Watergate. But it really institutionalized this notion that the tiniest, most insignificant things, this kind of third-rate burglary at a hotel in Washington, can really be the crack that opens up the door to this
the
tremendous—
The truth is out there.
Yes, exactly.
Another great film, also directed by Alan Pakula, as you mentioned, came out in 1976, which was the story of the Washington Post exposing Watergate, All the President's Men. And maybe you don't even need to describe what that is, but it's that, right?
Yes, yes, exactly. It's All the President's Men. I think this is, of all the movies in the series, probably the one that people at least know of the best.
Let's play this clip.
Mitchell started doing covert stuff before anyone else. The list is longer than anyone can imagine. It involves the entire U.S. intelligence community, FBI, CIA, justice. It's incredible. Cover-up had little to do with Watergate. It was mainly to protect the covert operations. It leads everywhere. Get out your notebook. There's more. Your lives are in danger.
I literally got goosebumps right now sitting here listening to that clip.
Yeah, it's such a great scene, and it really—
It was Hal Holbrook, by the way, as Deep Throat, who we didn't know this until recently, but was the number two guy in the FBI at the time.
Right, and just I think if you've ever seen the movie or even that clip, you can't help but picture the setting of this dark garage where they're meeting. It's so ominous. They're surrounded by this empty space that you feel like another character could step into at any moment. They're not safe. That sense of danger is omnipresent, and that line, "It leads everywhere," is just so key to this mindset that, you know, everyone is involved. Everything is a conspiracy.
All the President's Men, I think, is the only film on your list so far that's entirely and pretty scrupulously about and consisting of historical fact, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, they were very scrupulous about sticking as close to the real story as possible, to the point of spending $500,000 in 1973 money to rebuild the Washington Post newsroom on a soundstage, and got trash shipped out from the Post to put in the wastebaskets. It has a somewhat different texture from the other movies in that, you know, you don't have scenes in the other movies of people kind of knocking on doors and crossing names off lists, because that stuff is traditionally not cinematic.
Yes. It's not life with the boring bits taken out, as Hitchcock said.
Yeah.
It's the boring bits.
But the miracle of it is that they managed to make, they make typewriter keys sound like gunshots, and they really bring home how powerful this sometimes very boring job can be.
I have wondered lately and thought about and written about, actually, how and if these great films of the 60s and 70s, these conspiracy thrillers, actually played a real and significant role in oversensitizing Americans to the idea that everything bad is the result of conspiracy. Do you think so?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the case. I mean, I think people have certainly talked about how even just the existence of Woodward and Bernstein in the 70s kind of created a whole generation of journalists who are expecting to find their own Deep Throat and take down a presidency. And it creates this unrealistic expectations for the public in how solid the information will be. I mean, that happens with, you know, real life conspiracies are rarely as well orchestrated or as seductive as the ones in movies. So we sort of impose these narratives on top of them and get a very false picture of what's really going on.
Yes. The most recent movie on your list is Jordan Peele's fantastic Get Out. This is a clip from that film in which the star, played by Daniel Kaluuya, telephones his friend back home to talk about his misgivings about his white girlfriend's family, whom he's visiting.
I didn't want to tell you.
What?
I got hypnotized last night.
Nigga, get the fuck out of here.
Yo, to quit smoking, but it's Rose's mom's a psychiatrist, so.
Bruh, I don't care if the bitch is Ayanna Van Zandt, okay? She can't fix my motherfucking life. You ain't getting in my head.
I know she called me off guard, right? But it's cool, because I'm cured. It worked.
Bruh, how you not scared of this, man? Look, they could have made you do all types of stupid shit. They have you fucking barking like a dog, flying around like you a fucking pigeon, looking ridiculous, okay? Or, I don't know if you know this, white people love making people sex slaves and shit.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're not a kinky sex family, dog.
That was Daniel Kaluuya and Lil Rel Howery in Get Out. We will avoid giving too much of a spoiler for a movie that hasn't been out very long, especially. But what are the elements in this horror film that make it a conspiracy thriller?
Well, yeah, well, this, as I mentioned, I kind of warped the definition of the traditional conspiracy a little bit to mix things up and to just talk about some movies I wanted to talk about. And this is, I think, the furthest out from that. It is, you know, more of a kind of horror thriller. Jordan Peele, the writer-director, has kind of, I think, coined the phrase social thriller to refer to it. It lacks the larger political element that we usually think of it as being part of a conspiracy.
Because it's a small group of people.
Yes. So, yeah, it's again, without giving too much away, but it is a conspiracy that's just based in one small town.
And I think people know, and perhaps that clip should have told them, it's a conspiracy of white people in which black people are the victims.
Yeah, but this is a movie in which, like The Stepford Wives, which is the 1975 movie that Peele is cited as his biggest influence, it's a movie in which we have this one very small conspiracy. It's kind of like society is the conspiracy. I mean, what's going on in this small town is very obviously and transparently a reflection of kind of institutional, really liberal racism across the country. And I think that audiences who keyed into the film very much sense that. So it is about kind of history or society as a conspiracy rather than something deliberately orchestrated.
Well, Jordan Peele made the conspiracy deliberately outlandish. It allowed it, even though it's beautifully realistic in many ways as well, to be a great allegory, right?
Right. I mean, one of the interesting things about conspiracy thrillers is they indulge kind of our darkest fears, but there is also something strangely comforting about them in the sense that they tell us that, you know, we actually are right when we think that things are wrong around us. And they tell us that someone is in charge, you know, that all these crazy things that are happening in the world, they are happening for a reason, even if we don't understand it. And it is, you know, maybe in some way comforting to think that systemic racism is the product of, you know, a small group of conspiring white people who, I don't think it gives too much about the way about the end of the movie, can be vanquished.
It's interesting that you mentioned the comfort of conspiracism, the comfort of that kind of paranoia. But back in 1973, in Gravity's Rainbow, the great Thomas Pynchon paranoid conspiracy thriller of its time, he talks a lot about that very thing of that we can't live without a certain amount of believing that there are people in control, because like that's really scary if nobody's in control.
Right. And I think that history shows us that's often closer to the truth, that there really is no one minding the store. And in some cases, the things aren't conspiracies because they don't need to be. You know, society is set up in such a way that people don't need to actively conspire with each other because they all kind of know their roles.
Sam Adams, this has been great. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You can listen for free to the first episode of Sam's podcast, Conspiracy Thrillers Movie Club, at slate.com.